Welcome in, Tennessee Titans fans, to another episode of Believe in Titans podcast. We can call this the final episode, I guess, of the off season program. The Titans players are now on their own from now until training camp, following the conclusion of a final week of OTAs. A little bit of a schedule change this year, there where the last round of OTAs came after mandatory minicamp, and a number of high profile players took advantage of the opportunity to skip out on a voluntary workout this week, or a couple of voluntary workouts, I guess. You know, some of them probably did, but that is their prerogative. We've gone through that many times. Voluntary means voluntary, but it's onward to training camp now, and we will look in that direction with our regular panel, led by former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing good this evening, David. How you doing?
I am doing great. Nashville Post writer John Glennon. John, how are you?
I'm well. Hope you guys are also.
Good to have you in as always. And I am David Beauclair. And let's sort of start this one with a little bit of a review, going back to something we discussed last week. DeAndre Hopkins was in town for a couple days early this week. He posted on Instagram his revival when he was sitting in the limo or whatever you want to call it, and there was a welcome image on the screen there with that pictured him in a Titans uniform. He's also visited with the New England Patriots this week. Bill Belichick was kind of vague when asked about what was going on there, although did confirm that they've had discussions with him. As of now, those are the only two teams we know that DeAndre Hopkins is talking to. So let's go one on one here, Denard. If you know, what advantages do you think the Titans have over the Patriots in terms of trying to sign him? Where do you think the Titans might have some issues with the Patriots here?
Well, first of all, it's up to the player, David. You know, D-Hop right now, we know that you and John alluded to the fact that he's looking for a certain amount of money right now. And he's, what, 31 years old, entering his 11th season. So right now, you don't know what's in a player's head. What he's looking for is he knows he's at the end of his career. And if I'm D-Hop and if I'm Rand Carthon, first of all, what I'm going to do is do what a good general manager will do when a high caliber free agent, he's visiting your organization. And I want to ask him this is, what are you looking for? What are you looking for in an organization? What do we have to offer you? And first of all, if you're looking at D-Hop, from his situation, we know compensation is number one. That's always the key for a player. But David, look at this. We talked about last week. We talked about I Am the Athlete, that podcast, and he was talking about some of the things that he's looking for in an organization. He talked about defense being one of them. And what better way? You got the number 15th ranked defense, the number one team against the run. You just signed Jeffrey Simmons. You know defense is not an issue in Nashville. So when you look at it, what about championship? We know that this is a team that's what last year, one game away, one play away from going to what, their fourth consecutive playoff.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, a year removed from back-to-back division championship.
A year removed.
You know.
And then David and John, look at this. What you talk, and then consistency at the coaching position. Mike Vrabel is the model of consistency. And right now, if I'm D-Hop, I'm saying, listen, who do they have on this team other than Treylon Burks? When I walk in here, I will be more than likely the number one receiver. So right now, I think it all adds up. What are you looking for? And that's a question that D-Hop has to answer himself.
John, I mean, same thing, I guess, to you. Do you see the Titans as a much better option than the Patriots? Or do you see it as kind of a dogfight right now?
I tend to see it as a dogfight. You know, we referenced the one factor that seems to be weighing pretty heavily with DeAndre Hopkins, you know, so far in the fact that he has only visited the Titans and the Patriots, and that's familiarity. He certainly has it with Bill O'Brien, who is the head coach of the Houston Texans. He has even more of that, more people in the coaching structure, with the Titans, with Mike Vrabel, who is with the Texans, Tim Kelly, who led him to a great season as an offensive coordinator. Charles London was the running backs coach there and is now the passing game coordinator for the Titans. So a lot of familiarity. I give the Patriots a little bit of an edge in cap room and maybe the money that they're going to be able to pay him, certainly at least this year. As it stands now, Patriots are about 15 under the cap. Titans are about 8. That could change. Titans could certainly change some things up. And also the Patriots have to sign their first and second round draft picks. So that's going to be a little bit of a drain there. Quarterback, if you're a wide receiver, that certainly has to be a factor, right? And in my book, if I'm looking at the two quarterbacks right now, Ryan Tannehill is a proven commodity. Is he a top of the line guy in the NFL? No, but he's a solid, proven guy, a consistent guy who's shown he can get the job done more often than not. You're looking at Mac Jones, on the other hand, in New England. He's had 2 years in the league. His rookie year was pretty decent. His last year was not very good. So, I think you look at that and you say, I'd rather have Ryan Tannehill of those two be throwing passes to me. And then I think, like you mentioned, Denard, I think it's interesting what DeAndre Hopkins might be looking for in the wide receiver room. If he is looking for, does he want to be the main man? Does he want to be that target guy? Then probably the Titans are his best bet, as we mentioned. Burks and Phillips, all guys with some potential, but not a big track record. Whereas if he goes to the Patriots, there's a little bit more experience there. You look at DeVante Parker, Juju Smith-Schuster, and a few other guys. So he would be sharing the wealth a little bit. So does he want to have a little bit more talent in that wide receiver room, or does he want to be the recognized alpha, at least at this point in his career anyway? So that'll be dependent on him. And then maybe one last thing. I don't know if this factors in a lot, but just in terms of where he'll be playing. And I say that for two things. One, the division, the AFC East is going to be a little bit of a bear. And we talked about this last week. The AFC East is going to be mighty tough this year with Buffalo, with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Miami is loaded up to score all kinds of points. The AFC South is still the AFC South until proven otherwise. And then when I say also in terms of where he's playing, it's simply the region. DeAndre Hopkins is a South Carolina native, a guy who has played in some warm weather spots, Houston, Arizona over the years. Wouldn't he rather come to another warm weather spot, a place that's pretty close to his home in South Carolina? I don't know if I see D Hop being a wintry Boston kind of guy.
And don't forget the New York Jets when you're talking about the AFC East. They're
Yeah,
everybody's
absolutely.
darlings this offseason. And, Aaron Rodgers is going to help them go undefeated there, I think. That's all that they were missing, it to read some of the reports. Yeah, when I think about New England, I imagine Bill Belichick sitting down with him at some point and saying, look at what we have done with free agents, veteran, some older guys in their career. When you talk about a Randy Moss, for example, or a Corey Dillon, or guys like that, where Belichick says, we understand how to use guys and help them, when they're proven commodities, we'll help them do what they can do. But those things happened, of course, to your point, John, when Tom Brady was the quarterback. Now, if you're DeAndre Hopkins, you go into a situation where it's probably Mac Jones, but maybe it's Bailey Zappi. I mean, and neither one of those guys. Maybe it's one thing if you're planning to be there for several years, but by all estimations, wherever he ends up, it's almost certainly going to be a 1 year deal this year. And so, Ryan Tannehill is the Titans quarterback for one more year. Why wouldn't you, if it comes down to just a choice between these two? And I'm not convinced at all that's going to be the case. I think there's going to be more teams interested. But if it is a choice between these two, I think the quarterback thing is probably the biggest factor. You know what you're going to get in Ryan Tannehill. You know you've got a guy who can throw the ball in spots that NFL quarterbacks need to throw the ball, who can read NFL defenses, and a guy you can build a rapport with over the course of the year. And all you have to do is look at what he did with AJ Brown and say, yeah, if I produce for this guy, he's gonna feed me the ball. So it's fun to watch Titans fans on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. There I sense sort of this cautious optimism where everybody feels like, you know, like nobody wants to think this is a sure thing, but I think people are looking at this right now kind of going, you know what, this could really happen.
Yeah, and David, when you look at the film, like when defensive coordinators, when they're starting to get ready to play Tennessee next, let's say in 2023, and they're looking at the perimeter, they're going to look at Treylon Burks and they're going to say, you know what, he has the ability to top the defense. So what happens is he's going to garnish a lot of attention. So what that will leave D-Hop is with a lot of one-on-one matchups. David, you alluded to the fact that he's one of the best receivers when it comes to contested passes. He goes up and get it. So if I'm D-Hop, man, that's a great opportunity for me to be implemented into the game plan and to be a huge part of what the Titans are trying to do in 2023.
What's interesting too, and again, David, as you mentioned, there's no guarantee that these are the only two teams that are going to wind up being the finalists. But as it stands right now, these are two teams that have never really done spectacularly well with their wide receivers in terms of A, producing them, B, investing in them, or C, valuing them. For a long time, it was kind of the Patriots philosophy. Well, doesn't really seem to matter who's there because we got Tom Brady throwing to him and he's going to complete passes anyway. And we all know the difficulties that the Titans have had finding receivers, and that's why, you know, another reason it hurt so much when they traded AJ Brown last year. But yeah, the two finalists right now, you would hardly categorize either one as you know, a wide receiver's dream come true. But hey, it's beauty's in the eye of the beholder right now.
Yeah, I saw I think it was CBS Sports had sometime in the last week they had the list of every franchise's all-time leading receiver in yards, you know, ranked by their total. And Ernest Givens for the Titans Oilers, I think, was like number 27 on that list. I mean, the Titans have had a 10,000 yard rusher, and 80 Georgia have never had a 10,000 yard receiver. And it seems like that's a much easier mark to get to over time. Talking about Ryan Tannehill, though, he was a guy who was around through the final week of OTA, and you know, I guess this is an interesting nugget. This is one of those things that's fun for the offseason, especially when you talk about Treylon Burks a few weeks ago having to hire a pilot to fly him in to make sure he got here on time. Ryan Tannehill now has a pilot's license and is free to fly himself wherever he wants to go. John, you heard the story. What prompted that? What is he looking to do by being able to take to the skies?
You know, it sounds as if when he talked today, just a guy who was kind of, you know, interested in you know, a new little hobby, if you will. He said he really enjoyed it. Because it certainly made him feel very in the moment, you know, present. Obviously, you have to have your complete focus on what you're doing when you're flying a private plane. And I think that's something that he really appreciated and enjoyed. You know, he said that Mike Vrabel, you know, was supportive. And Mike Vrabel kind of joked about the situation later, saying, you know, he sort of encouraged Ryan Tannehill to maybe fly some bigger planes. Hey, why not? And we asked Mike Vrabel, you know, would you be willing to go up with Ryan Tannehill And it was a quick hell no from Vrabel, and he said, "I've got trucks that are bigger than the planes that he's flying right now." But you know, Tannehill obviously feels very confident in it because the day after he got his license, he took his family up. He took his wife and two young children, and had said he had a great experience up there. But I don't know. It kind of calls to mind the question, you know, you hear raised from time to time, you know, should teams be concerned with what players are doing in the off season when it comes to something like this? And you know, I look back at an example of a standard NFL player contract from a few years ago. I'm not positive it's the same thing now, but some of the sort of things that you're not supposed to be doing in the off season, you know, it says without prior written consent of the club, player will not play football or engage in activities related to football or otherwise than for the club, or engage in any activity other than football, which may involve a significant risk of injury. So I guess there's a question, does flying an airplane involve a significant risk of injury? I mean, the thing is, if you're getting injured, it's probably going to be pretty significant. So I guess it's the whole, you know, what really are the chances of a plane going down? But I don't know. It just seemed like a little bit lighthearted on the part of the Titans today. I don't know. I guess I'd be a little bit more concerned. I you know, what about taking up, you know, billiards or marbles or something like that in the off season, Ryan, instead of flying a plane? But hey, you know, guy likes what he likes.
Well, you know, Denard, that you know that like the subject of motorcycles is probably addressed by most teams with players, right? And playing basketball and things like that. How seriously do players take those issues and the potential of getting hurt doing something outside of football? Is this something that you would be concerned about if Ryan Tannehill was your teammate?
Heck yeah. That's in your contract. It's in fine print in your contract. If you have an accident outside of the premises of where you work, you are responsible. What was the running back years ago? I think it came out of Georgia, the kid that blew out his knee, having a great career, big running back. He was at
Garrison Hurst.
No, not Garrison. Garrison Hurst hurt his knee, but it was the other, after Garrison Hurst. He came in around 96 or 97. He was at the Pro Bowl and tore his ACL, and he was never the same. Oh gosh, what's the key? He was a great young running back. I think he had a monster rookie season, and he ends up getting hurt at the Pro Bowl. They were playing, was it flag football in the
Yeah, sand football, right?
sand
Yeah, yeah.
football, and tore his knee up. And Robert. Oh boy, I'm sure wish I
Oh,
didn't.
Robert
Robert
Edwards?
Edwards,
Yes.
yeah, you remember him. Great
Yeah.
back, great
Yeah,
back.
that's right. I'm just looking it up. There it is. Robert Edwards.
Robert Edwards, God, he was having a heck of a career and tore his knee up playing flag football in Hawaii at the Pro Bowl, and that's.
1500 total, a little over 1500 total yards and 13 touchdowns as a rookie, and
Oh, he was a monster.
yeah,
Never was the
never did anything
same.
again.
Never
But
was
like,
the
I mean, do guys talk about that on their way out the door for the summer? Like, you know,
Yeah. You
do
know what,
you
Lou?
like hey, like when you were a young guy, did Blaine Bishop come to you and say, "No basketball, young man, no," you know, that sort of
David,
thing?
what a wonderful. I love that question. Let's not forget. Do you remember when Marcus Robertson was in the motorcycle accident?
Oh
Tore
yeah,
his, you remember that?
I do remember that now.
Yeah,
You
and he
mentioned,
was
yeah.
out. And you know what? There was a lot of speculations. And I remember when he hurt himself in a motorcycle accident, he had to have all of those stitches and
I
things.
remember, yeah, I remember his face was scarred
Yeah,
up
his
pretty
face was
good.
disfigured. And I remember there was a lot of talking going around was what's going to happen with Marcus? Now all of a sudden he's hurt at a pivotal time when we need him. This was around the playoff times when he got hurt. What was that? Oh gosh, I want to say before the Super Bowl, he was ruled out. And it was
Well, no,
because
that was with the broken leg in the
that was a broken
Jacksonville
leg.
game.
Okay, I forgot,
Yeah.
but he did have the motorcycle
I
accident.
think
But
that was
that's
the now I think the motorcycle accident was the next season.
okay. But you know what I'm saying is that as players, we know that when you go do like you go play a game of pickup basketball, you tear your ACL, that's on you. That means that your contract can be voided. And so one of the things my agent would always tell, he told me, he says, Denard, whatever you do, you have to make sure you take care of yourself, because you, if you do anything, you go get a motorcycle, let's talk about this. And that's something that I'm sure Mike Vrabel and Ryan Tannehill, you know, they had that conversation. But I think Ron will be okay, David, as long as he don't go to Cincinnati.
You know what? It was 1999. It was right before the playoffs.
Yeah,
and he played great in those playoffs. I remember, before he got hurt in the Jacksonville game, he was having a terrific game. But 150 stitches to close facial cuts.
He didn't have a helmet on. That's what we was getting on him for.
Yeah, I think Tennessee didn't have a helmet law at that time. So.
Have a seatbelt law back then.
that'll do it to you.
What's interesting to you, you were talking about who might end up or who has confidence in him or who's worried about his flying, and Tannehill was talking today about he was asked, are you going to take any of you guys up for a spin, that kind of thing, and he said first question went to Treylon Burks. Of course, because Burks, just recently, of course, took that Cessna private plane in from Arkansas to get into Nashville on time from the OTAs. And he said, Traylon was like, I think that was just a one-time thing. I don't think I'm up for anything more than that. And then he said, he kind of tossed a question around the room a little bit more, and, anybody else interested? And he said he got a whole lot of, but not a lot of firm commitments at this point, so he's still wondering who'll be the first to go up with him.
Yeah, I'm curious too. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, 6'5", right? I mean, I don't envision those things having a lot of headroom either. I kind of feel like he's being squeezed in there a little bit. But while we're on the subject of quarterbacks. One thing that has come up this offseason through workouts that people have been able to see and whatnot is that rookie Will Levis can throw the ball. He's got a strong arm, no question about it. There is some concern, maybe some wonder, if you will, about does he have touch? Does he know when to sort of back off his fastball a little bit and throw a changeup, or can he learn to do that? And Denard, as I was thinking about this, Steve, you watched Steve McNair go through a same sort of process, right? I mean, there was zero doubt about Steve McNair's arm strength when he came into the league, and you come in a couple years later when he was becoming a starting quarterback. Did he struggle with that? Is that a hard thing for a quarterback to learn in this league?
It is. It's control. It's all about control. It's about accuracy. And it takes time. Let's not forget, when Steve came in, Chris Miller was a starting quarterback in 95. And then they ended
in
up
in 96. Yeah.
96. Yeah. They went with the veteran. And you know what? That happens all the time. David, we talked a few podcasts ago about a lot of young quarterbacks when they first come into the NFL, how they struggle. We talked about Troy Aikman. It wasn't just the record, but it was, their performance and the throws. We talked about John Elway being the first pick in the 83 draft. He struggled his first year in Denver. Dan Fouts, the greatest Charger of them all, he struggled the first year. Peyton Manning with all of the – what did he throw, about 100 interceptions that first year? And one name came to mind. It was a young man from Oregon. I go way back. The kid was taken by Cincinnati. Akili Smith. And he had a cannon of an arm. The problem is he would throw so hard that the receivers literally would drop the ball. And I remember one time we was playing him, and he threw a slant right to me, and the ball went right. Well, of course, a lot of the balls went through my hands. It was so what they had to teach him was to kind of, let off a little bit, pull off, and that's something that, again, Will's got to learn, because he's a big guy, 6'3", 231 pounds. What, he can throw like 80 yards down the field?
That's the word. Like, he can throw it 80, 85 yards in the air, apparently.
But he's got to learn something that all great quarterbacks, they always tell you, touch. You got to learn that touch, David. Until he learns that, it's going to be a struggle him getting on the field.
I was going to say, we referenced Steve McNair. The best thing McNair learned was Throw it to Frank Wycheck right
Where the
across the
heck are
line of
you?
scrimmage there.
That's
You know,
it.
he's sitting down in a zone. You don't need to knock him over with it. Just get the ball in his hands and keep the chains moving. And then Derek Mason was sort of ran a lot of those same routes. I mean, that was that sort of became his thing. John, you know, how much did you witness coaches sort of working on that with him, talking about it? Do you sense that it's sort of a daily conversation for him right now?
Yeah, I do think that, and you do notice that a bit in some of these workouts that we watched here during the off season, that generally when there are inaccuracies, it's on those passes where there is a little bit more touch involved. When he has to hum that ball over the middle, and we saw it a lot in Kentucky last year too. He made some incredible passes. I can remember seeing a lot of clips on like third and long. That he came through on just because he could rip that ball 20 yards downfield, no problem. But yeah, I think Tim Kelly, used that familiar baseball reference, kind of saying you have to have more than one pitch in your repertoire. The fastball is great, but you have to be able to use the change from time to time. You have to be able to know when to use the change from time to time. But then, what was also interesting too is in talking to Levis the other day afterwards, and we kind of asked him about the velocity question and the accuracy question, and he said, in the days and the weeks leading up to the draft, he said he was really working on touch, and taking a little bit off some of the ball and that kind of thing. And he said then he found himself in kind of a, I think it was a red zone drill here during the off season. And maybe he tried to put a little bit too much touch on it and it didn't work out. And he said, who of all people comes up to him afterwards, but Mike Vrabel, and says, look, in a situation like that, just rip the damn ball. What are you doing out there? What are you trying to throw this put too much touch on it, whatnot? Just hum it, get it in there. So a little bit of conflicting advice, but I think everyone, and Ryan Tannehill talked about it today. He said that's usually a developmental process. In the pros, it took him a little bit of time too, but certainly, Will Levis, there was a little bit of an accuracy question coming into this league, and most of those, the questions came up on throws where he was trying to loft it, place a little bit of touch on the ball instead of trying to hammer it.
Yeah, and I suspect what we'll see early in the preseason, and again probably if he gets the chance to get some meaningful minutes in the regular season, I think back to Jake Locker in 2011. You just sort of need to play through that as a quarterback. The first time you get on the field, first few times, whatever, as an NFL quarterback, you can tell things are happening fast for these guys, and whatever they've been working on in their footwork, whatever they've been working on in their arm angle, all that stuff goes out the window for a period of time because you're just trying to process what you're seeing, and you're not thinking about this other stuff. I remember Locker distinctly in 2011 in a regular season game in Atlanta, which was first time he got meaningful minutes. Matt Hasselbeck got hurt, I believe, that day, and Locker came in, and it was fastball after fastball after fastball, and it was impressive in a way to see him just zip the ball over and over again. But you were thinking, oh my God, this guy needs to just dial it down a little bit. And Jake Locker's not going to go down as the best quarterback in franchise history by any stretch of the imagination, but over time, the more experience he got, you could see him sort of process through all that and understand. And by all accounts, Will Levis is a very, very smart guy too. So I don't imagine that will be a problem for him. So.
David, a good thing Will needs to do, he needs to go back and look at those old NFL films, and they had one on John Elway, and they had the receiving corps when he first got into camp. And they was, had Vance Johnson, Mark Jackson, and Ricky Natil. And he said that when John Elway, when he first came into camp, those guys were so scared to catch the ball because he threw so hard. So John had to learn to take something off the ball. Could you imagine your receivers are afraid of you if they're gonna like run a slant just because they think that you're gonna break or split their fingers?
Well, you would get the Elway cross. Remember, they talked about the
Yeah.
Elway cross. The ball would hit, the nose of the ball would hit them in the chest, and they'd get this little T-shaped
Yeah.
seam, you know, from the seam of the balls that, you know, where it was, where the ball would kind of give them a mark. Yeah, he, yeah, they, and that's a guy who certainly figured out how to make, you know, all the throws. I don't think, I don't think anyone doubts that when it comes to John Elway. As we get to the end here, I want to, you know, last week we talked about position groups where you have the most concern or areas on this roster where we were most concerned. So let's flip that. Let's get a little more optimistic today. John Glennon, as you look at this roster now at the end of the offseason, where do you see, where are you most confident? Where do you think Rand Carthen can say, we're good. Let's just get to training camp here.
Yeah, I'll take a quick look at a couple. One, you know, maybe it made a bit as obvious, but I think anytime you have Derrick Henry in your backfield, you probably got to feel good about the running back situation, no matter who the heck else is in the running back room. But that said, they have been using a lot of Tajae Spears here in the offseason. He looks to be like a very versatile guy. He looks like he's really going to be able to add something to that room, be the scat back guy, and also contribute, I think, otherwise. So I like that room even more so now with the addition of Tajae Spears. And maybe, you know, it's tough to go wrong with the D line on the other side of the ball. You know, not only do you have a Jeffrey Simmons back, but he's fully healthy. He is fired up. He's got a new contract. He's a happy guy. You know, you've got T.R. Tartt, who really seems to be taking strides. It's about every year now, I think, is a lot better. And we talk about the guys that are sort of rotating in, you know, whether they're edge or whether they're D line, Denico Autry, Arden Key, you know, really give you a lot of versatility there. You may not have quite the depth. You know, you lost a couple of guys like DeMarcus Walker and Mario Edwards, who were both very good last year. But I still think that that front group is really going to be tough, you know, especially to run against coming up.
Yeah, Denard, is there any better position group, any better part of this roster right now than the defensive line?
No, I got to go with the running backs again, because you bring back arguably the best back in the league. You're talking about Pro Football Focus has the king ranked second behind Nick Chubb, and that's a close second, but. David, I'm going to pay close attention as a former secondary guy to the secondary, this especially the safety position. And I want to see how Elijah Moten's going to work out as safety because they're thin back there. We don't know the situation with KB. We don't know what's going to happen with the Marshall. And I don't want, boy, if something happens to Amani and Kevin Byard, are you sold on the fact that Josh Thompson and Mike Brown can be those guys that step in and play big? And I don't know, David. So again, it's going to be how Elijah Moten evolved in changing positions in 2023.
Well, and the good news is that you know, presumably they don't need Elijah Molden at cornerback. When you talk about when you talk about having Christian Fulton, when you and Roger McCreary back, you know, you're gonna see what you have in Caleb Farley once again. You've got the free agent. Oh God.
Murphy Bunting. Sean
Say
Murphy
thank you,
Bunting.
God. Yeah. Sean Murphy Bunting is his name just flew out of my head. So, you know, underrated and certainly in my mind, you know, not as good as the defensive line, but I'm okay with the inside linebacker group too. When you talk about Azeez Al-Shaair and Monty Rice, you know, I think there's a lot of excitement about Monty Rice and what he can do as as an every down linebacker for this team. We should note, by the way, David Long got hurt in Miami again, by the way, is missing time here the last couple of weeks. But then, you know, Chance Campbell, a guy who they were really excited about after the preseason last year, last year's seventh round pick, ends up on injured reserve at the start of the regular season, missed the whole season. You know, he's going to be back in that mix. And then the guy who got his opportunity because of injuries last year and got a lot of love, Jack Gibbons, Dr. Gibby, as Mike Vrabel called him, an undrafted free agent, but you know, a smart guy. You know, you think about Brad Castle for this team back in the day, who was an undrafted free agent and ultimately became the starting middle linebacker. You look more recently at Robert, what's his name? Ended up as a starter with the Steelers the last couple of years after coming into camp as an undrafted rookie for the Titans here, and they ultimately couldn't hang on to him. So between those four, that the depth at that position was really tested last year between Jayon Brown and David Long and Rashawn, well, the 2 years ago, excuse me, Rashawn Evans, and those guys consistently getting hurt. Cunningham didn't, couldn't get past injuries last year. This, it's sort of a fresh group, but I think it's a group that you can feel okay about, even though there's not a lot of production outside of the free agent there.
Did David Long, is it soft tissue?
It was. I don't think Mike
No.
McDaniel said. I'm trying to remember because that was when I started reading it. I was like, oh my gosh, tell me it's not a hamstring. And I don't think it was a hamstring, but yeah, that was some news this week. So you feel bad for him.
Yeah.
David Long's good guy and a good player when he's healthy. So
Say
that is going to
quick.
do it though for this edition of the Believe in Titans podcast. Denard Walker, thank you as always.
You.
John Glennon, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
And thank you, everybody, for listening, for downloading, for telling your friends, and look for us to be back next week with another edition of Believe in Titans.